Happy Monday, everyone. It's time to read the Fort Dodge Messenger for Monday, October 21st, 2019. I'm reading to you from the studio located in Friendship Haven in Fort Dodge. My name is Cindy. I am glad you're listening, and we'll start today with a look at the weather and headlines. Our weather is a high of 53. Expect a 60% chance of rain with the south wind. I heard on the TV this morning it's going to get windier as the day goes on. We have one main headline today about Apple Fest in Fort Dodge, and then a repeat article from Hometown Pride on Sac City Mayor. So we will begin. There are several pictures, of course, of Apple Fest with kids having fun. There's a picture at the very top of the page, colored picture with Taylan Peterson, age 6, making a corn kernel angel in the big corn box at the back 40. And there's Aaliyah Valesco, age 4, dancing along to music on top of a tractor tire. And then there are kids of all ages jumping on the blow-up kind of trampoline apparatus they have out there. The Community Apple Orchard closed its annual Apple Fest session Sunday afternoon. The three-weekend fall event welcomed thousands of families from Fort Dodge and the surrounding area for pumpkin picking, apple picking, hay rides, corn mazes, and more. Owners Greg and Bev Bedke have had at least part ownership of the orchard since the 1980s, and obtained full ownership in 1990. According to Greg Bedke, Apple Fest has been a fall staple of the orchard for decades. "I think it's a kind of drawing card for the community," Greg Bedke said. "We're pretty diversified. We have the apples. We also do lunches, the bakery, the gift shop, and the back 40 playground. There's pretty much always something for somebody to do." Apple Fest is the first three weekends in October, and this year, rain put a slight damper on the first two Apple Fest weekends, Greg Bedke said. "By far, this is the better weekend out there, out of the three," he said. "On Sunday afternoon, it was great and very busy yesterday and today. Despite the rain, the orchard still saw between 6,000 and 7,000 families each weekend of the Apple Fest. The visitors are Greg Bedke's favorite part of Apple Fest, just to see the kids and parents go out and find that pumpkin or play here in the back 40, just having a good time with a smile on their face and having fun. That's what we're here for." The orchard will remain open through December 22nd. The back 40 playground remains open through October 31st, and rides to the pumpkin patch will still be available on weekends from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. October 27th. And then there's a couple more pictures. It shows Matthew Blue, age 12, feeding the goats. And it shows Jesse Davenport of Fort Dodge racing his daughter Harlow in the pedal cart track on the back 40. It's a really cute picture. Okay, our repeat article. The caption says, "Bunt, I've always been a fan of local." And there is a picture of Sac City Mayor Scott Bunt posing in an empty lot left by a demolished building that will soon become a miniature park and green space. The work is one of the many projects he's helped out on as board member of the John Criss Foundation. So now to the article. Sac City Mayor says he wants to focus on what's good for the community. Mayor Scott Bunt is a pretty busy guy with several different hats to wear and lots of irons in the fire helping out the community. He owns Sac City Hardware and Appliance with his wife Kelly. He operates Tree Boss Tree Service. He owns several rental properties, and he serves on the John Criss Foundation Board. "Today is going to be full," he said. The couple purchased the store about 3 years ago. "We stress you can offer customer service. We service what we sell. We're friendly, and we try to go that extra mile." Prior to the hardware store, Bunt owned a local grocery store. "I've always been a fan of local. He tries his best to purchase everything he can locally as well. Even if they don't have it in town, they can usually get it. You have to give the local guy a chance. It's always worth giving the local business a chance. As mayor, Bunt has a seat on the board that oversees $5.7 million endowment from local resident John Chris. It's money that used to benefit that's used to benefit the community as a whole, he said. It's for the betterment of the whole community. Its latest project is a pocket park downtown in a lot where the building was demolished. It will become an inviting green space for residents and visitors to enjoy. Almost all the work is being done by local contractors. The whole idea is to keep it close. The John Chris Foundation has funded other projects in the community. The tennis and basketball courts at South Park were refurbished, new shelters built, and a host of other improvements made to the park. We used our local guys. Everything is locally purchased, if it's possible. It's a win-win. We keep the local guys busy. Bunt said the community is not just seeing, but feeling the positive effects of the Chris projects. The town is looking better. There's a positive vibe. The town has made a corner. It's going to be better and better. It's a process. We're heading in the right direction. Some of that work is readily seen driving through town. Landscaping, a Freedom Rock, a new illuminated sign at the hospital, bright new street signs, work in the cemetery, a new dugout at the Sac City Little League ball field, a paving project at the airport, updated LED lighting at the library and community rec center. Work is happening all over the community. We've done about 50 projects. Next month, we'll find the next project and get started. We're bringing back the Chautauqua building back to life. It's one of the last three in Iowa. It will be as good as new as we can make it and keep the historic character. As mayor, Bunt is on his fourth of a four-year term. He ran at the urging of friends and with the encouragement of the community. You learn a lot, he said. You learn how cities are run. Would he go for another? Probably. If the public wants to, I'm game. I want to focus on what's good for the community. He's good at keeping his mayoral role separate from his other lives. I keep my personal feelings out of it. If you focus on what's good for people, you really can't go wrong. Bunt has organized several projects with help from members of the community. I do a lot of volunteer work and try to get people involved, he said. We repainted all 146 fire hydrants, and now you'll see they are shiny red. We spent less than $500 for paint, brushes, and supplies, and a brand new one is $7,000. He also organized a project to repaint the light poles and signals downtown, as well as painting project at the city, Sac City Veterans of Foreign Wars. There's plenty of people that helped me, he said. Bunt has also been a member of the Chamber of Commerce for 30 years and a Lions Club member. He prefers actually working on a project to meetings that plan it. I'm a doer, he said. I'll do every project, but I don't want to go to five meetings about it. Smart guy, I'd say. Yep. All right. You know, Halloween is a couple weeks away, so they've been featuring the 13 days of Halloween. And today the picture continues with a display of friendly purple spiders and other spooky things that are blown up at 224 North 22nd Street. The display is the work of David Poldevart. His sister Deborah Poldevart said it took him 10 days to get the display perfect. It's kind of down close to the Casey's corner down there on 2nd. And then you can nominate a display at 573-2141, extension 472, if you think someone has a yard that needs to be pictured. Okay, from our files, October 2004, the picture file is of Bill Griffel, said that the vines crawling up and around the Ringland Smeltzer three-story house will eventually have to be taken down before renovation begins. Since then, the vines are indeed gone, and the historic home has been extensively renovated. One of Fort Dodge's treasures, that's for sure. The poll this week says, do you agree with President Trump's decision to withdraw troops from northern Syria? And you may answer at www.messengernews.net and look on Sunday to see who agrees with you or not. This date in history, today is Monday, October 21st, the 294th day of 2019. That means 71 days left. So on this day in 1892, school children across the United States observed Columbus Day, according to the Gregorian date, by reciting for the first time the original version of the Pledge of Allegiance written by Francis Bellamy for the Youth's Companion. Well, I didn't know there were two versions. May have to look up something today. In 1879, Thomas Edison perfected a workable electric light in his lab in Menlo Park, New Jersey. And the thought today comes from Charles Buxton, an English writer who lived from 1823 to 1871. And it said, silence is sometimes the severest criticism. There's your food for thought for today about silence. Okay, how about the editorial? The Messenger editorial is a reprint from the Wall Street Journal today. So it says Trump should push for better trade deal. Recently announced pact with China amounts to a trade truce. President Trump on October 11th announced a trade deal with China that he called tremendous or tremendously positive 15 times. The details look far more modest to us, but this truce in the trade wars beats the alternative of escalating tariffs that have already caused a significant global economic slowdown. Mr. Trump said China will make some $40 billion to $50 billion more in agricultural purchases over 2 years and has promised to better protect intellectual property and welcome more foreign financial services. In return, the United States won't increase tariffs to 30% from 25% on $250 billion of Chinese goods this week, as Mr. Trump had planned. The two countries also agreed to keep talking toward what Mr. Trump called a phase two agreement that would include the tougher issues such as Chinese technology theft and predatory regulation against American companies. There will also be a new consultation process to address disputes and monitor enforcement. The implication is that if progress continues, Mr. Trump will cancel the tariffs planned for December on more Chinese goods. In essence, both sides sued for a temporary peace to forestall further economic damage. China avoids a tariff escalation that has been hurting its exports and induced Beijing to impose capital controls to avoid capital flight and a run on the Chinese yuan, Y-U-A-N. Mr. Trump gets election year farm purchases that will alleviate the harm his tariff war has done to American farmers. Equity markets should be relieved and higher stock prices should buoy fading consumer confidence. None of this amounts to the kind of grand deal that would fundamentally shift China's relationship to the world trading system. Xi Jinping will still be able to avoid the harsh decisions that would require him to reform state-owned industries and rein in thieves at the Ministry of Security. Assuming the truce holds through the 2020 election, Mr. Trump may believe he can then resume negotiations in a stronger position vis-a-vis China. He made no concessions on Huawei, the Chinese telecom company, whose chief financial officer has been charged with fraud in an attempt to evade U.S. sanctions against Iran. If Huawei is a threat to U.S. national security, then it should be considered separately from these trade talks. Mr. Trump deserves credit for challenging China's abusive practices, but he'd be in a stronger negotiating position had his tariffs not done so much to weaken the U.S. economy. By withdrawing from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, he reduced U.S. trade leverage with China. By imposing steel and aluminum tariffs on allies, he made it harder to form a coalition of trading partners to confront China as a united front. And by focusing on economically irrelevant bilateral U.S.-China trade deficits, he has distracted from China's serious trade abuses. If Mr. Trump gets a second chance with China in a second term, these are the mistakes to avoid if he wants a better deal. Like I say, econ was one of my harder classes in college, so oof-ta, some of that spins my brain. Whoops, sorry about that. I thought I had my phone on silent, which I think I do. I don't know how to do it for text messages.
It's not a problem.
Shh. All right. How about some music information? Fort Dodge area symphony conductor Joshua Barlage, I think it is, B-A-R-L-A-G-E, Joshua Barlage, leads the ensemble during the Musical Landscapes concert at the Fort Dodge Middle School on Sunday afternoon. The symphony's next concert will be a Merry Christmas with Max and Katie at 3 p.m. on December 1st in the Fort Dodge Middle School auditorium. Wow, I guess we'll be hearing about all sorts of holiday things because we're not that far out, are we? In a month they'll be talking it big time. Then there's some pictures. Amanda Warren is playing the second violin during the performance. There's her picture. And then there's a picture of Lauren Jensen of Mason City and Brian Robison of Fort Dodge playing the bass during that concert Sunday afternoon. So lots of entertainment there. All right. I think I forgot to read the community calendar, so we'll go back to that. It's a typical Monday, you know, so that means at 11:45 at Willow Ridge will be the Fort Dodge Rotary Club. The Al-Anon Non-Smoking Club will meet at noon at the First Methodist Church at 127 North 10th Street. And the AA Alano Club will meet at noon and 7 p.m. on 12 North 7th. All Addictions Anonymous. They always meet in Webster City. The All Addictions Anonymous always meet in Webster City. And that happens at from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. tonight at their Trinity Lutheran Church. The Lion's Den Dance is tonight at the former Isaac Walton Lodge in Fort Dodge on Expo Drive. That starts, it lasts from 6 to 9, and you may bring your own beverage and snack and hopefully a $5 donation. Humboldt Dakota City Noon Kiwanis, now get this, Humboldt Dakota City Noon Kiwanis is meeting at 6 p.m. at Vinny's Barbecue. So that might, in Dakota City, that might be a change for some people. Bingo, 6:30 tonight at the Opera House at the Fort Museum Village with the early bird starting at 6:30. The Fort Dodge Duplicate Bridge plays tonight at 6:30 at Citizen Central. Beta Sigma Phi Sorority Beta Beta Master Chapter is at 7 p.m. at the Pat Hassett Home on 2708 12th Avenue South. The Badger Lions Club is going to meet tonight at 7 p.m. at their community center. The public is welcome. And you also can contact Roger Curtis at 545-4487 if you're interested. The Fort Dodge Choral Society practice, 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. tonight at Grace Lutheran Church on South 9th Street in Fort Dodge. And the NA Young People's Group will meet tonight at 8 p.m. at the Humboldt County Courthouse in Dakota City. Calendar seems a tiny bit shorter today. Not sure why, but all right, let's see. I think we have some school news. School news. We have an interview because it's Monday with what seniors are saying, and today it's with Mason Bachhoven, who's a senior at Fort Dodge Senior High. So his first question is, what programs do you participate in? And it says baseball, National Honor Society. Number two, what academic accomplishment are you most proud of? And he has answer, maintaining a high GPA while consistently challenging myself with difficult classes. Number three, what's your best piece of advice for younger students? Be the hardest worker and most humble person in any room you walk into. What's your go-to artist, Taylor Swift or Dan and Shay? What's your favorite class or subject and why? That is business finance. These are important skills which I will actively use throughout my life. What's your favorite movie is question number six, and he said 300 or Forever Strong. I guess I need to look those up. 7. If you could have dinner with someone famous, who would it be? Donald Trump to shake his hand, or Tim Tebow to learn life's lessons? What are you working hardest on right now? And his answer is kickboxing. 9. Who is your role model in life? Both of my parents, because they have been actively involved in my life from the beginning, always wanting the best for me and carrying me through every one of life's ups and downs. Last question. What is your favorite memory from your time in Fort Dodge schools? And that is creating long-lasting relationships with outstanding people. Next, they have already announced the musical at Fort Dodge Senior High, and that is A Little Piece of Heaven. So the Fort Dodge Senior High Drama Department will present A Little Piece of Heaven at 7 p.m. on November 1st and 2nd. Oh, this is a play. Never mind. It's not the musical. But they did announce the musical, too. But this is a play. Their fall play. A fall play. A Little Piece of Heaven, November 7th, 7 p.m. Of course, and on November 1st and 2nd, of course, in the Gail Neiswinger Little Theater. In this play, an unlikely relationship is forged in the quirky tourist shop called Little Piece of Heaven. Restless biker Mike, who works in the shop, finds a friend in the sassy elderly Lily, although the relationship doesn't start out that way. But there's something odd about this little shop owned by the equally odd Elizabeth and Henry. Suspicion and disagreement turn to respect and trust in this place where long lost things are finally found. Admission is $5 per person. Tickets will only be sold at the door. Activity tickets will not be honored. A bake sale will be held during intermission with proceeds benefiting the Speech and Drama Booster Club. And for more information, you may contact the main office at the Senior High at 955-1770. And there are 18 cast members and 30 backstage crew members. That takes a lot of people. So ensemble roles. We have Henry, played by Josh Meyer. Elizabeth, played by Grace Champagne. Judith, played by Melanie Buttrick. Jared Havens, played by Jacob Laird. Glory Havens, played by Gracie Miller. Michael Caine, played by Caine Freeman. Frank Thomas, played by Sawyer Springer. Janet Thomas, played by Victoria Pavic. Girl, there's a girl role by Kali Reed, a boy role, Connor Bruns. Lily Adair, played by Isabel Beekman. Herb, played by Antavion Adams. Deb, by Jerry Evans. Sam, by Grant Harrison. Man, by Bo Tracy. Lily St. John, by Katie Delaney. Male Swing, is a Cole Hamlow, and Female Swing is Caitlin Ganzeveld. So they will be busy. They've got a couple weeks, and they'll be presenting their play. All right. A couple announcements from St. Edmunds. St. Edmunds Catholic School students Hannah Lukert, Manuela Rodriguez, and Faith Sherburn were recently selected for participation in the 32nd Annual Opus Honor Choir Festival. More than 2,600 students were nominated by their directors for the 720 positions in the 4 Opus choirs. Selections were made by a means of a recorded audition. Guest conductors of the choirs include Roger Jensen, retired, I believe from Trainer, 5th and 6th grade choir, Joseph Tangen, Pella Middle School, 7th and 8th grade bass clef honor choir, Colette McEllen, Mid Prairie High School, Wellman, 7th and 8th grade treble clef honor choir, and Dr. John Flannery, Bishop Heelan Schools, Sioux City, and he will, I believe, handle the 9th grade mixed honor choir. That's hard to read how they have that divided up. The 2019 Opus Choirs will perform 4 p.m. November 21st in C.Y. Stevens Auditorium in the Iowa State Center in Ames. The Opus Honor Choir Festival is made possible by the Iowa Choral Directors Association, Incorporated. St. Edmund's puts the I in kind with a new program. St. Edmund Catholic School started a new program recognizing its middle schoolers. The school challenged them to be the I in kind and are recognizing a male and female student from 6th and 7th and 8th grade each month. The St. Edmund definition of being kind is someone who makes another feel cared for, included, and encouraged. Each month during the school year, the middle school teachers will select two students in each grade, which shows these qualities. The October students selected by the staff for being kind this month are 8th graders Madison Hepperly and Denny Ehn, 7th graders Abram Larson and Gracie Winkle, and 6th graders Faith Sherburn and Nizelle Garcia. Okay. I think I have just enough time maybe to read this article before the obituaries. This is about FFA, and it's an exchange story from the Sioux City Journal, but since there are so many of some of the listeners and the area around about FFA, I thought it'd be worth a shot to read it. It says, City Kids Drawn to Sioux City's District's First FFA Chapter. Quick, what's the difference between dirt and soil? According to the East High School 12th grader Jonah Schneider, the dirt is the stuff that gets under your fingernails, while soil is the stuff that provides nutrients to make plants grow. I didn't know that till I started taking a Career Academy Pathway Ag class, he said, prior to the Principles of Agronomy session. Schneider must be a fast study since he's also president of the Sioux City's district first ever FFA chapter. Formerly known as the Future Farmers of America, the FFA was founded in 1925 as a student organization to promote and support agriculture education in schools. Snyder and other student officers for the inaugural FFA chapter were presented with their iconic blue jackets during a Sioux City FFA Ag dinner last week. Sponsored by the Sioux City Public School Foundation, the program featured a catered dinner in addition to a keynote speech by Ag Secretary Mike Nag. Wow. Proceeds will help Sioux City students attend the 92nd Annual National FFA Convention, which is October 30th through November 2nd in Indianapolis. Organizing a local FFA chapter was a dream come true for Career Academy Ag instructor Taylor Wiedauer, since she was an FFA member when she was in Colorado as a teenager. Even though I was a city girl with no direct connection with farm life, I gained experience as a leader through FFA. Indeed, only two or three of Wiedauer's Ag Pathway students have any connection to farming. Some students want to learn about agriculture since they'd like to become veterinarians in the future. Others, like Snyder, are considering pursuing ag business as a career path. I don't know much about farm life, but I'd like to be an entrepreneur, he said. I own a lawn mowing business with a buddy of mine, and that's as close to nature as I get. However, agriculture can actually involve everything from finance to medicine to sales to science. That is why Wiedauer was happy to show students how they could dissect a virtual reality flower via 3D technology. I bet some of us would be blown away if we saw some of this stuff in the science labs. Today's agriculture is all about using state-of-the-art technology, she said. Students are naturally curious. Offering agriculture classes to city kids will give them an opportunity to consider a career path they had not thought of before. All right. Let's see, let's turn to our little disclaimer and then the obituaries. We are listening, or you are, I'm talking, you're listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. The Messenger can be heard daily at 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. If you have any questions or comments about our program or any other IRIS program, give us a call at 515-243-6833. and today's obituaries. Just basically one announcements, mostly, with one very short obituary out of Hampton. Joan Held. Services are 10 a.m. Wednesday at St. Peter's United Church of Christ on Raven Avenue, 496 Raven Avenue, Geneva. Visitation is 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at Lynn's Funeral Home, 1521 Washington Avenue in Iowa Falls. And lynnsfuneralhome.com can be contacted for more information. Okay, so for the Front Gunderson Funeral Home, Millie Netland's funeral is today at 10:30 a.m. at St. Olaf. And visitation, Richard Whitcomb, that visitation will be 4 to 6 p.m. Wednesday at the Tompkins Celebration Center. And then the funeral will be 10:30 a.m. on Thursday at Corpus Christi Church. From Laufensweiler's, there is a funeral today for Eileen Fleming, age 95, at 10 o'clock. And at 10:30 a.m. at Corpus Christi. So that they always have a two-part thing there. Anthony Tony Germeland, age 75. That funeral, 10:30 a.m. Tuesday at Laufensweiler Funeral Home. The visitation is tonight from 4 to 7. Stephen P. Klinkafus, age 50. That celebration of life will be 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, tomorrow, at the funeral home, with the service at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday at St. Teresa's Catholic Church in Des Moines. Richard Nolta, age 79. That funeral will be 10 a.m. Wednesday, starts at the funeral home at 10 a.m. and then follows up at Corpus Christi at 10:30. Visitation Tuesday from 4 to 7 p.m. for Richard Nolta. Darlene McCurdy, that age 87. That funeral is Thursday at 2 p.m. at Corpus Christi. Visitation will be Wednesday from 4 to 7, and the Catholic Daughters of American Rosary will have something at 2:45 p.m. at the funeral home on Wednesday. Irvin Bud Fair, age 94. His celebration of life will be 9 to 11 a.m. October 26th. That's a Saturday. October 26th at the Laufensweiler Funeral Home. And John P. O'Hearn, age 63, the celebration of life will be at 1 p.m. October 26th at the funeral home. And the visitation is from 12 to 1 prior to the service on Saturday. All right. So those are the obituaries for today. On to sports. Kind of a local story. A day I'll always remember. With family in attendance, Fort Dodge's Clement honored as the National Eye Club Volunteer of the Year. And there is a picture of Larry Clement and the 11-year-old grandson Jake Humpel as they're waving to the crowd during the Hawkeye game against Purdue on Saturday. So this is out of Iowa City, of course, written by Eric Pratt. When the University of Iowa's iClub organization named Larry Clement in its 2019 National Volunteer of the Year, the longtime Fort Dodge businessman responded by making one request. "I wanted to make sure my grandson would be allowed on the field to share the moment with me," Clement said proudly. iClub organizers gave it the okay, and I'm glad they did. It was a day I'll always remember, and I know my grandson Jake will as well. The 74-year-old Clement was recognized during the first quarter of the Iowa's homecoming game against Purdue on Saturday at Kinnick Stadium, and just as he hoped, his 11-year-old grandson was by his side. "That's what made it special, being there with Jake, my daughter Christy Humpel, and my son-in-law Jeremy. It was just fantastic. We missed having my wife Kathy and granddaughter Katie with us. Katie had a dance competition back in Sioux Falls, so Kathy stayed back there with her. But having my family with me just meant the world. I've never been big on awards, rewards, or recognition, so while I greatly appreciate this, I got a lot more out of the look on Jake's face and seeing him up on the big scoreboard in front of 70,000 people. Clement moved to Fort Dodge in November of 71, has been an ardent supporter of many athletic programs, both local and statewide, for as long as he can remember. The Newton native and 1967 University of Northern Iowa graduate officially joined the I Club in 1973 when his dealership began to provide them, Iowa Athletic Director Bump Elliott, with a mode of transportation. "We had a lot of friends and customers in Fort Dodge who were I Club members when we came here," said Clement, who played football while at UNI. "To me, getting as involved as you can in community activities and making the right connections with the right people were always staples in business. So it only made sense to support the University of Iowa through the I Club organization." According to the website, the I Club generates over $17 million annually today to help its 650 student athletes through travel, housing, training, medical treatment, nutrition, uniforms, and other expenses. "The University of Iowa called our dealership and asked if we'd be interested in furnishing Bump's car. I'd known Bump for a while as he was a class act all the way. So I said, of course you have a deal. Iowa has always run a very good, clean athletic department. You never had to worry about them being involved in cheating or scandals. When they recruit, they do it the right way, which was important to us." Clement Auto and Truck remained active with the University of Iowa Athletic Director's Office through Elliott's retirement and Bob Bowlesby's tenure. The athletic department often used Clement's airplanes for recruiting trips and other travel necessities as well. When Bump retired in 1990, they had a party for him at the Finkbein Golf Course in Iowa City. The donors raised money to buy him a retirement gift, a new Buick Park Avenue that we sold to them. And when Bob took over, the relationship continued. "I was actually student teaching and helping coach the football team at Waterloo West when Bob was a student athlete there, so we went way back." Clement's loyalty wasn't limited to Hawkeye Nation, though. Fort Dodge-based dealership also provided transportation to leaders at Iowa State University and Clement's alma mater, Northern Iowa, for 20 years in the 80s and 90s. "I remember checking the schedule one Friday in the 90s when we were at Dodger Stadium watching Fort Dodge High play, and I saw Iowa State had an 11 a.m. game and Iowa at 2:30 and UNI at 6, Clement said, "and we made it to all three. I remember the Cyclones and Hawkeyes both lost and saying on the plane heading for Cedar Falls, I hope we don't go 0-3. Fortunately, the Panthers won. That was a fun day. We were as active as possible, as many different schools and organizations as possible with them. The local schools, Iowa, Iowa State, UNI, you name it. And when the community supports you, you support the community. If they're good to you and you return the favor as much as you can, and we made a lot of both business and personal connections through our schools." Clement still runs Clement Aviation Incorporated, which operates in both Fort Dodge and Sioux Falls. He laughed, "I doubt I'll ever fully retire." Larry and Kathy have a home in Sioux Falls where his daughter's family resides. In addition to his professional life, Clement was an avid race car driver and owner through the years. He had an ARCA racing team from 93 to 2008. Finishing as the circuit's second winningest owner all time with 75 career victories, with the vast majority with legendary driver Frank Kimmel. Clement was also a vital cog in the construction and development of the Iowa Speedway near his hometown Newton. Despite being inducted into numerous Hall of Fames for his accomplishments as both a competitor and a businessman, Clement said Saturday ranked right up at the top with a list of personal experiences. "We were on the field near the Iowa bench in the northwest corner of Kinnick at around the 15-yard line. Jake and I were just a few feet away from the Hawkeye huddle. We were able to watch a few plays when we were waiting for Clement to be honored. When we were waiting. That's the kind of stuff you just don't get to do very often, if ever. We've enjoyed so many events with Christie's family. Jake and Katie are so special to us. Jake will always be able to look back and smile when he thinks about Saturday and knowing that it made it all worth it for me. I'm just thankful and proud that the terrific organization like the I Club took the time to include us in their homecoming festivities." Oh, that's kind of neat connections there. Very, very neat. I do see an article up here that says that Iowa and ISU are ranked again in the college football polls, and it says that Iowa is now number 20 and the Cyclones are 23 in the top 25. So just a little trivia there, a little facts. Okay, today's hot corner. If we look back in history on this date, in 1956, Billy Houghton of the Green Bay Packers catches 7 passes for 257 yards and 2 touchdowns in a 42-17 victory over LA Rams. In 1972, one day after setting an NBA record by scoring 58 points in the fourth quarter, the Buffalo Braves scored an NBA record low 4 points in the third quarter of a 91-63 loss at home to the Milwaukee Bucks. 1973, Fred Dreyer of the LA Rams becomes the first NFL player to record 2 safeties in a 24-7 victory over the Green Bay Packers. 1975, Carlton Fisk breaks up a thrilling contest with a homer in the 12th to give the Boston Red Sox a 7-6 victory over the Cincinnati Reds and force a Game 7 in the World Series. So they're ahead of us because our series starts this week, doesn't it? 1980, the Philadelphia Phillies won the World Series for the first time in their 98-year history as they beat the Kansas City Royals 4-1 in the 6th game. In 98, the New York Yankees close out their historic season with a 3-0 victory at San Diego, sweeping the Padres in 4 games to win the 24th World Series. In 2006, Michigan State rallies from 35-point third-quarter deficit to defeat Northwestern 41-38 in the biggest comeback in NCAA Division I history. Wow. Okay. Tonight, Monday Night Football, New England and at the New York Jets at 7 p.m. on ESPN. There will be soccer this afternoon on the NBC Sports Network, Arsenal at Sheffield in the Premier League. And in tennis, there is a Swiss Indoors Basel in Vienna Open at 7. Oh, it's on now. Might be a close to over on the Tennis Network. And the Major League Baseball Commissioner has had a quote today, Rob Manfred, where he has speaking about the sudden death of Eric Cooper. This is a very sad day across Major League Baseball. And of course, Eric Cooper died after knee surgery. And I believe he had some Iowa connections, if I'm not. And he was recuperating at his father's home in Iowa when this occurred. So that was kind of a freaky kind of thing, I guess. I was trying to real quickly skim. He was an Iowa native, an Iowa State grad, and had made his way to officiate in baseball, and unfortunately died too early, result of a blood clot. Okay. Our Vikings, well, those of you who follow Vikings will notice that they won. And I guess those of you who follow Dallas, they won. Some people were very excited about that, the Dallas Cowboys. So that brings us to the end of the paper, really, for today. But remember last Monday I started on this article in the Reader's Digest about the signature dishes of every state. And unfortunately, I didn't mark down where I left off. But I hope I remember. I think I left off with after Arkansas, with California, and about food trucks. And so we'll hope that works. So the signature dish in California is fish tacos. And sitting at the beach watching the sunset and the surfers having a fish taco. Not many states can claim this experience, because all these are from Taste of Home field editors. So even though food trucks are an urban staple today, when Kogi Barbecue hit the streets in 2008 in LA, finding customers was an adventure. And he did it by posting his menu on Twitter. The spicy kimchi covered Kogi dogs helped too. Every stop, there'd be hundreds of young people and 12 middle-aged copycats in suits and ties asking where I buy my cabbage, said the chef. What do you think the signature dish of Colorado is? It is green chili pork. I have not had it. Colorado is one of the few states where you can find green chili. It's almost on every menu, served alone or slathering on something. Some of my favorite memories are the smell in my family's kitchen when my dad was making this dish with our family-raised pork, said Crystal Bruns. She's a Taste of Home editor. Who knew the Fool's Gold Loaf, featuring peanut butter, blueberry jam, a pound of bacon in a sourdough loaf, isn't everyone's cup of tea, but when Elvis tried one in Denver, he loved it so much he returned on his private jet to get more for his daughter's, Lisa Marie's, 8th birthday. I think I read that last time. I'm so sorry. I don't know where I left off. Let me look up here and see if I went further than I thought. Oh, well, it's still kind of interesting. Maybe you can see if you remember. Did you remember Connecticut was clam pie? In the 20s, an Italian immigrant named Frank Pepe began selling pizzas with fresh shucked clams, garlic, olive oil, and grated cheese on a thin charred crust. In Delaware, the signature dish is scrapple because of pork scraps, cornmeal, flour, and spices. And there's even a scrapple cook-off and expo held everywhere in Newark. In Florida, the signature dish is Cuban sandwiches. Tampa claimed the Cubano as its signature sandwich in 2012. The Tampa version is a triple threat featuring ham, roast pork, and Genoa salami, and exactly 3 pickles. Of course, in Georgia, the signature dish is peach cobbler. And in Hawaii, it's the Kalua pig. Hawaii residents generally take a shortcut and start with pork butt rather than using the whole hog, and roast it in the oven and cook it in a slow cooker until the pork is fork tender. Often chopped cabbage is cooked with it, and it's typically shredded and served over rice. Sounds good. In Idaho, fried trout is the signature dish, where more than 70% of trout in the United States is from Idaho, but of course much of it's farmed. But on the Snake River, there are 6,000 wild rainbow trout per mile. And it may be synonymous with Idaho, but potatoes aren't native to the state. A missionary, Henry Harmon Spaulding, brought them west to Lapwai in 1836 and taught members of the Nez Perce tribe to cultivate them. And we know in Illinois that signature dish is the deep dish pizza. And brownies originated in the Palmer House in Chicago. How about Indiana? Hoosier pie, or sugar cream pie, was a famous among the Amish and Shakers in Indiana. The custardy nutmeg dusted pie was cheap to make. And then Red Orville, I think I read this last week, native Brazil or Indiana Orville Redenbacher started producing his own popcorn when he was 12. In Iowa, of course, we have the breaded pork tenderloin. Kansas. Beer Rocks, B-I-E-R-O-C-K-S. German pastries stuffed with ground beef, cabbage, onions, and spices. Every year, Kansas farmers in Kansas typically grow enough wheat to make 36 billion loaves of bread. loaves of bread. Kentucky, the signature dish is hot brown. After dancing the night away at the Brown Hotel in Louisville, Prohibition-era revelers would head out to the hotel restaurant for this open-faced turkey and tomato sandwich doused in Mornay sauce, sprinkled with cheese, and broiled and topped with bacon. I don't think I've ever heard of that. And we know about the mint juleps in the Kentucky Derby. Louisiana signature dish, gumbo. Gumbo is the food of the gods, and all the variations of gumbo reflect the many origins and cultures of the people of Louisiana. In Maine, it's the lobster roll with twisted buttered split top bun. But Maine's official state treat is the whoopie pie. Of course, Maryland is crab cakes, and they like their Old Bay seasoning with their crab cakes. And you use beer, not water, when you're preparing them. Maryland state dessert is Smith Island cake. Dates back to the 1800s when women made multi-layered yellow cakes to send with their husbands who went oystering. Massachusetts, Boston baked beans. Originally from the Native Americans, the slow-cooked dish is flavored with molasses, maple syrup, and bacon. And the Puritans made it on the Sabbath. And then there's a fact, fun fact. Who knew? The town of Quincy isn't known as the birthplace of the American dream for nothing. It was the original home of the two fast food icons, Howard Johnson's and Dunkin' Donuts. Michigan. The signature dish is meat pasties from the Cornish copper miners on Michigan's Upper Peninsula. It's a circle pie crust filled with minced beef, potatoes, onions, carrots, rutabaga, folded in half, crimped and baked. Sometimes the wives of the miners left room in the small corner of the pastry to put a chopped apple, sugar, and cinnamon for the last bite of the dessert. And their fact, John Harvey Kellogg was the king of cornflakes, but he was almost as famous for his Michigan-based sanitarium and health spa. And people went there like Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, and President William Howard Taft. Minnesota's signature dish is hot dish, a casserole made with cream and mushroom soup, vegetables, meat, and a starch such as tater tots. My dad didn't like vegetables in his hot dish, so my mom would leave them out. I was baffled when I had my first tater tot hot dish with vegetables in it at the age of 20, says a reader from St. Cloud. And then, of course, who knew? I knew this. Betty Crocker isn't real. That didn't stop this fictional spokesperson, a creation of the Washburn Crosby Company in Minneapolis that was later bought by General Mills, for being named the second most popular woman in the nation behind Eleanor Roosevelt in 1945. Mississippi's signature dish is catfish. These days, catfish are mainly raised on fish farms. Mississippi is home to more than half of the catfish farms in the United States. It gets plenty of hot on the bayou. During the late 20s, Mississippi would beat the heat by sinking their feet in the mud of the river. And that came the inspiration for Mississippi mud pie, whose dense chocolate resembles the river's muddy banks. Missouri's signature dish is barbecue. Kansas City is known for its barbecue, and the Show Me State's first barbecue establishment opened in 1908 and was actually run out of a trolley barn. Also big in Kansas City is burnt ends, the outer parts of the smoked beef brisket, cut into small chunks and deliciously outer smoked char and the succulent inner meat. And their fact is, did you know? Do you suffer from frequent heartburn, perhaps too much because of the barbecue? So did Nellie Howe. Her husband, a St. Louis pharmacist, invented Tums for her in 1928. Montana, the signature dish is chicken fried steak, which is dipped in an egg and flour and fried and often served with white gravy. And their fact is Rocky Mountain oysters, known as Montana tender groins and cowboy caviar. This dish is made from the testicles of a young bull. Nebraska, you may not know this, their signature dish is runza, a pocket sandwich similar to Kansas's B-Rocks with extra cabbage. The sandwich chain Runza, a Midwest favorite, got its start in Lincoln. And their fact is that in 1953, Omaha-based Swanson & Sons overestimated demand for turkey and found itself with 260 extra frozen birds. Solution: ordering 5,000 trays and assembling the first TV dinners, complete with cornbread, dressing, gravy, peas, and sweet potatoes. Well, now that is a fun fact. I did not know that. And I used to think those were a treat. Crazy. In Nevada, their signature dish is shrimp cocktail. To compete with the other gambling houses in town, Italo Gelfi, the owner of the Golden Gate Hotel and Casino, decided to bet on this seafood starter, selling it for 50 cents in 1959. And it has been conspicuously affordable in the Sin City staple ever since. Their fact: Nevada has been home to a proud Basque population since the 1800s. The Basque cake, filled with cherry preserves and cream, is still a favorite way to finish a meal of Chateaubriand with Bernays sauce. New Hampshire, poutine is the most appetizing name. It's not the most appetizing name, and it's actually worse when you translate the French word because it means hodgepodge or mess. But this French-Canadian recipe for cheese curds, French fries, gravy is justifiably a Granite State favorite. I hear people really like that at the Spencer Fair. Their fact: Samuel Kamen and Gary Hirschberg were running out of money for their organic farming school in 1983, so they put their cows to work and started making yogurt and launched a successful brand. Is Stonyfield a brand? Not sure. In Iowa, we hear about that. New Jersey. Oh, you know what? I'm going to put a big mark here so we can start here next time if we run out, although I will not be here next Monday. That brings us to the end of the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger, except for the weather. So let's look at the weather. Today, high of 53, tomorrow high of 51, sunny, Wednesday high of 56, Thursday gets a little bit chillier, 44, and our weekend stays sunny and in the 50s. So we wish you a great day. Brings us to the end of the reading. We thank you for listening to Iris. We thank Friendship Haven. We wish you all a dream to bless and a star to guide, and a really good Monday.